Pipeline, your dose of empowerment, and the pipeline to inform your decisions on how you can support change in our education system.
Yes, welcome back to TRP. We are the CEO of Education Podcast. My name is Lindsay, affectionately known as Miss Black.
And I'm Hadi Hot, Mr. Broussard. If you're feeling like, ooh, how am I feeling, Lindsay? You know, I should have thought about this a little bit because I caught you off guard last time. What am I going to say this time?
As you usually do.
You know, I'm feeling fitness because I know that both of us worked out really a lot today. You know, I'm not going to lie. Child. I was in the middle of a meeting and I got your ping saying that you did a 2-mile hike. I was like, you know what? Go ahead. You better do it. So I'm feeling fitness-y.
Okay. Little midday hike because I am really trying to hit my move goal every day this month. As I told you yesterday, why would I get all the way to solid core and not realize until I'm switching the weight on my machine that I don't have my Apple Watch?
You know how I feel. We are one and the same when it comes to that. Like, I do not like that. That is one of the banes of my existence. I'm just like, damn, the workout just doesn't count. It doesn't feel as good, but I'm like you. I'm like, I'm still going to feel, I'm going to knock that workout after, even though I left my watch. I'm like you. So I feel you.
Ooh, that was the goal. But we're going to wrap this up because we actually have a really, really juicy concept development today that we're going to get into. And we went a little over our scheduled time, but we didn't want to stop like the robust conversation that was happening because it's really important for us to uplift these voices and to provide a space for people to listen to these conversations. So without further ado, we're going to get into the concept development. We are rolling right into concept development. And if you are one of our avid advocates, you know that this is like the meat, the core, where we get into the true topic of the episode. And if you have been listening, you listened to our last episode or the last two, you know that we're diving into taboo topics. And so this topic is all about gender identity and how it shows up in the school system. And we have a very special guest. I'm actually very excited about all our guests, but this one in particular, because it's Cali all the way down. Bay Area is here. But anyways, let me check myself. Key. If you don't mind, go ahead and introducing yourself.
Yes. First, really happy that both of you have me here. My name's Key Lucas. I currently work at an independent school in DC. I've been at this school for around 6 years. And so within the school, I've been able to do a lot of work. I know 6 years teaching. But yeah, so I've been there for around 6 years. I've taught in their lower school. I've worked in the middle school as well. And a big part of the job and something that I found really joyful was doing some of the DEI work there. I was one of the kind of like the starters of our DEI committee. I lead all of our LGBTQIA affinity groups. I lead our student of color groups. And I've also kind of worked with faculty and staff in leading programming about LGBTQIA education.
Okay, before we even, it's not even on the damn script. What's the independent school?
Oh, private school. You want me to say private school?
Oh, no, I don't actually care what you say. I think saying independent just broadens our vocabulary, the podcaster and the audience as the listeners. Okay, independent school. Yeah. Because, okay, got it. And then a follow-up question, because I have a bunch of questions that are off script. The affinity groups are for, you're referencing like student affinity groups.
Yes. We also have faculty affinity groups as well, but we have a middle school LGBTQIA affinity group.
So y'all doing the fucking work.
We're trying. We are trying, you know.
I'm glad you double stepped that because I've never even heard of student affinity groups. And I know it's probably just a fancy way of calling it a club, but I like that because of the fact that that's what we call it in the workforce. We call them affinity groups. Yeah. You're in a employee resource group. You're in something of that nature. So shout out to this independent school you at. I like that.
I think it separates it from a club because a club just kind of gives it this like congenial, like, oh, we just come and we vibing, you know, just to hang out. Mm. But like, I think calling it an affinity group really sets intentional space around like, no, this is a group created for these people to come share an experience, be valued in their experience, and really kind of like work through things. So yeah, I love that.
Wow, this is beautiful. We're getting an episode right here. The support team affinity group. Okay. Just kidding. Okay. But that actually is a smooth transition into the content of what we're going to talk about. And, you know, we're talking about term.
Fun fact. I was ready.
Your fluff.
My fun fact.
Oh, your fun fact. Ready. I'm so sorry.
I got to tell people I'm fun. Trying to let me tell people I'm fun.
Sorry. I'm so ready. Okay, the fun fact. Go ahead, Key. That's my fault.
So I grew up in a karaoke family. My family, we karaoke down all the get-togethers, everything, karaokeing down. It was passed on to me. So it's just something that we do, you know?
Wait, well, you can't stop there. You got to let us know what your go-to song is.
You can't you're right. You know, it depends on the vibes, but we definitely, depends on the crowd. You know, I might go a little R&B. You know, sometimes, you know, if I'm trying to get it popping, you know, I might hit a little T-Pain, buy you a drink, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, okay, okay. You know what I'm saying?
No, but it really is just fun. It's just something I grew up doing with my family, and so it just always brings me joy.
I've never heard anybody say I come from a karaoke family, and now I'm like, I want to start a family being karaoke family.
That would be your family, Lynn. I love it. Yes, I can see that.
It's a thing. It's just out there, you know? It's a thing.
Sorry, okay. See, I'm about to derail this again because I got all these ideas. Okay, I'm going to mark that as I continue to plan out my life. I want to be a karaoke family. Okay, now we're ready for business. So let's all, you know, level set with terms, private school equivalent to independent school. And then there's some other terms that I'd like for you to clarify for us, just so as we move through the episode, people can understand the differences and the nuances in these phrases. So gender identity, gender expression, and sexual orientation.
Absolutely.
If we could kind of define those things, because I know some people think that they're all the same thing and they're not.
Yes. So gender identity is essentially like how a person identifies. Kind of if we think about it, not in certain binaries in a sense, but like in a spectrum of like how someone can identify. And gender itself is kind of like a construction, but it really is like a socialization of like behaviors of like this group of people do this. And we've also linked it to sex, right? So gender identity, normally people think woman, man, and it's all these behaviors that are associated with being a woman and being a man, and boys wear blue and women wear pink. So that really is what like gender has come to be. But gender identity is basically removing it from sex, removing it from male, female, and just saying like, well, this is how this person identifies within the gender spectrum. Right. You said next was gender expression, right?
Yes.
So gender expression, and I love this one, is actually one of my favorite things to do because I think people hear that word and they don't quite understand that like every day, the clothes we pick, the makeup you wear, the way you cut your hair is all a form of gender expression. Mm. It really is. Once you figured out how you identify, everything that you do is how you express your gender, even to the your personality or the way you pronounce words or things of that sort. So basically you have all these set genders or unset genders, and basically each person can really present their gender expression in a particular way. And so how it comes down typically with like labels. So, you know, in a lesbian community, you might hear the word stud thrown around, right? And when you think of that word, it's because a woman whose gender is expressed usually in masculine clothing, right? Mm-hmm. So again, that's a form of gender expression right there. And so I think we'll get there, but I think sometimes people get confused and they see a person whose gender doesn't really match their clothing and they automatically assume that that person's trans. And really, that just may be how that person likes dressing. You know, and so that's why we always want to say it's a clear difference from someone's gender and the way they might present themselves. Boys can wear makeup, you know what I'm saying? Girls can dress and be tomboys or wear boyish clothes and still say, I reside in who I am. So that's kind of like where gender expression, you want to make sure that you're kind of understanding the intricacies of that. And then you have sexual identity, which is basically who you're attracted to. Mm-hmm. Right. And so within all these genders, you know, everyone kind of has their own kind of like affiliation or like attraction to something. And for some, it's an attraction to no one. And even that itself is a sexuality, right? You have people who are asexual, you have people who are aromantic. But so it basically is defines how you find love, or if you are even interested in love, or what kind of attracts you in a partner or someone of that sort. So you have everybody, you know, I feel like in the past it used to be you straight or you gay, you know, but like language has, you straight or you gay, you know, but language has evolved. And like, I think as more language about gender identities have evolved, I think sexuality and sexual identities have also evolved. For a very long time, people didn't think bisexual was a thing, but like, there actually is valid. Oh, you catching shots?
I am laughing because this is okay. So if you went to Howard, you might have known about Cascade, right? Absolutely. I went to a meeting. I had never been to a meeting, and Nini's like, "Oh, just come with me to this meeting." It was the meeting about bisexuality, and the president, I'm not going to name their name, but the president at the time was stamping that bisexuality is not a thing. And I just remember, like, you could tell the people had opinions about bisexuality, it being a real thing or it being curiosity or not. And it was a couple of women in there crying because they really felt unseen, or like, I'm not seen in like this community, I'm not seen in that community. And needless to say, I never went back to
my Cascade. Yeah, that's a hard one to walk into. That's the craziest one to walk into. But no, it's so valid. Like, I do think the bi experience is very, like, people tend to invalidate it. You know, people shouldn't tend to try and make it seem like there's no way. But I feel like if there's bisexuality, then you have openness to all these other ones. Like, so if there's no bisexuality, then are you saying no one can be pansexual? And essentially pansexual is, well, I'm open to all gender identities, to all forms. And so, yeah, it's just like there's this evolution, I feel like, in sexuality. And I think as we start to like unlearn and deconstruct and kind of get ourselves out of these boxes a little bit, maybe our minds will open up a little bit. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of those boxes and unlearning and evolution, I'm just wondering, because I've heard that there's a state in this country that is trying to make for essentially the LGBTQ community just to disappear. And so I'm just trying to figure out, like, what have you heard? If you can just enlighten us more about, like, if parental rights are under attack all of a sudden, just break it down for us, Kate.
Hypothetically speaking, of course.
So there's that one state all the way at the bottom of our country. Yeah. in Florida, so I guess maybe actually like last year, in the past year, over the last 2 years, there's been this kind of longer debate, and it's called the Parental Rights and Education Act that they were trying to pass in their state senate. A lot of people might have heard about it as a Don't Say Gay bill. And there's kind of like this large contentious argument between like parents and schools and who has rights in terms of what their kids can learn. And this bill specifically was targeting issues of the LGBTQIA community. So things on this bill was saying that like it explicitly prohibited you teaching any form of education about gender, sexuality, orientation to any kindergarten through third grade student. Can't talk about it at all. Right?
Oh, I didn't know it was grade. I didn't know it was lower.
It literally is grade based. And then beyond that, it says it has to be age appropriate and be appropriate and in line with like age appropriateness. We'll get there. The other thing, we'll get there. The other kind of like major like points that it was saying is that if under any circumstance, the school learns about information, important information that deals with their kids' physical safety or emotional well-being or mental well-being, that they have to be notified about it, right? As parents, the school district must notify parents if they were to learn anything or to learn about a change in a child's well-being, right? Additionally, schools have to, before the school year starts, give out to parents what their kind of like health education curriculum will be. And parents can have the right to withdraw consent for their child to attend that class, right? So there's all these things around like, well, I should be able to do this as a parent and kind of like controlling what narrative my kid is getting. There's danger around like all of these things. And so it also had to do with kind of like getting a lot of that material. So you may have been hearing in the news around, they were just like pulling books out of their libraries and the students' things. It passed. It's here. It's the current reality. And they're going even further. I don't know. You may have heard that they're trying to kill AP classes in African-American studies. Like, I really do hope that people will see that, like, it's going to keep going. Like, it doesn't stop here.
Exactly.
Now, you're thinking it's just some gay shit. But, like, it doesn't stop there. They're coming for you next. But, like, so that's kind of like the state of what's happening there. It's really sad, but it's a trend and it's kind of getting to other states. And a lot of people are having this mentality. A lot of parents have this mentality.
It's really, I really want people to understand, one, that everything is interconnected. And when we decide something today, we're setting a precedent for what can be done tomorrow. Like laws, first of all, I'm a firm believer in all the rules are made up. Let's be very clear. When lawyers are seeing a case, right, some of the analysis that they do is they look at cases from the past that were similar so they can see how it influences what they're going to do right now today. And it's not always like cut and dry, like A and A go together. Mm-hmm. It's like a small nuance, like, oh, I saw that this was different. And I'm just like, it's just going to create more discriminatory practices. And it's really disappointing, in general. Yeah. And I guess we could kind of just look at how it's impacting the schools, like the teaching experience, adult experience. I guess we could just like jump into that and what that looks like. I know everybody's so experience.
Imagining you're in a school like this, you heard like basically the stipulations and like, I'm kind of saying it's not verbatim, but I'm literally kind of saying like exactly what it's saying. And it's vague. It's as vague as you're hearing it. So telling a teacher that it has to be
age
appropriate, how do I discern what that means? And in this law, it's saying that these parents can take action against me. So if you're like, imagine as a teacher, what that choice looks like. Most people being human, I need my job. I'm not touching this with a 10-foot pole. Like, because I don't know what's going to get me in trouble or what's not, what do I do? You know?
Yeah. And that's the crazy part for me is that I think back to when I was in the classroom, and it's crazy for me to hear that they are laying this out almost as if there haven't been so many other challenges to our education system, specifically special education. Like, if we're going to talk about creating and building systems to make sure that we're creating equitable environments, let's start with that and look at the countless amounts of challenges that are currently pending in the legal system. Like, do you know the door that you're opening up by saying that these parents now have the right to sue educators when the education profession is already a profession where educators are fleeing the classroom? They don't want to be a part of it anymore.
Absolutely.
There's a teacher shortage. Like, so what are we saying? What are we doing? And like, why now?
Again, does it make it worth it? You know, like every day there's all this teacher burnout. And the more you add on, it's like, is it worth it? Like more and more the things you're piling on in my job, it's heavy and it's a lot to hold. Like,
I love to use the word weird when I don't have the other words. I'm like, y'all just being weird though. Like it just, first of all, parents, you should just come into the classroom and come see the lesson yourself. Because I've literally had a parent tell me that she doesn't want me teaching her son Common Core math. Exactly. She came in and tried to address me in front of people. And I'm just like, look here, good sis. I'm going to teach what the curriculum is. That's my job. It was also really odd and like just speaks to like the ignorance and fear of not knowing. I'm like, you don't understand, but your son is actually like, he's at the top of the class and that's putting it on me. I have him teach the kids. And this was a second grader. And so I'm just like, you know, I just see that is math, something that's like commonly agreed upon and people don't understand, but they're like, hey, I don't understand. Let my kid learn it. And I'm just like, we need to build holistic beings. And so we can't just stop at, I trust the teachers to teach math, right? We have to push on to, I trust the teachers to teach my child how to be a functioning citizen in the world. And understanding other people and other people's personhood is part of that.
And you're hitting it. It's distrust. And it's particularly more and more you're seeing these parents or these group of parents essentially putting distrust in education again. And it's like, I don't know where it's coming from, but it's rising. It's increasing. It's just like parents feeling like education isn't happening in the way they think it should. But like you're saying, Lynn's like, but you don't even understand what your children are being taught now or the intent behind it or the purpose behind it or actually how it could be helping your child develop. It's not what you learned and it shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. Why would we be teaching the same things that you learned 50, 60 years ago? We can't advance that way.
You better tell them. We can't do that. We can't do that.
It's not the same math. It shouldn't be. It should not be the same math.
Exactly. Like,
let me mark that clip. Hold on. It shouldn't. It shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be.
All right, that was really. That's real. That was really powerful. It just shouldn't be the same thing. So when we think about like. Curriculums, what do you think like would be the ideal like inclusive curriculum? Like what components would there be? What would that look like?
Yeah, and you know what? I think that's a really great question because when people hear, oh, well, we're gonna start including LGBTQIA things or issues or that experience into the curriculum, they're thinking that we're gonna sit your kid down and say, hey, we're reading only gay books. Hey, let's watch a lesbian movie. Hey, you be gay. Everybody be gay. Rainbows every day.
Sprinkles, unicorns, yes.
But it really, it kind of is just kind of being intentional. And actually, there's a lot of different groups, resources that like can really walk you through what inclusion looks like developmentally. Like the gay, lesbian, and sexual, listen, basically, like they're an education network that really deals within LGBTQIA issues. And like they have tons of resources out there. But when you're looking at it on the smallest levels, because it should begin in kindergarten, but it's not as scary as you think it would be. It's actually as simple as talking about what families are. Mm-hmm. Talk about families. Ask them what their family looks like. Let me say what my family looks like. Talk about all the different possibilities of families so that they can understand if it's encountered in the world and they see two men walking down the street with a child. It's not some foreign vision for them. Mm-hmm. You're teaching them the facts that there are families with two dads. There are families with a mom and a dad. There are families with one parent. And it's the blanket reality. It's not forcing down a few things down their throat. It's opening up access for you to really see all the different kinds of things that exist. And that isn't as hard to swallow as people think it is, but that's not what people are being told what inclusive education could look like. Right? Mm-hmm. And as you get older, it changes. Yeah, you can be more intentional like with what you're teaching, because when you start growing older and you want to get into sex education or just kind of things of that sort, well, then that does have to be introduced into the conversation, right? You look at statistics, you have a lot of LGBTQ youth and sexual, you know, transmitted diseases running rampant because they honestly aren't being taught what sex would be for them, right? Mm-hmm. And it's reality. Like, we have sexual education because we know that kids are going to engage in these behaviors. But when you only teach one side of it, you're putting other people in danger.
Yeah, in danger.
You're excluding a whole other experience. So I don't know. That could be controversial to some, but like,
yeah.
If you're teaching about anatomy, you're teaching about body parts, and you're teaching about these things, all of these things exist. It doesn't hurt to know.
Yeah. And you made a good point about people not understanding what's being taught. And I think that the disconnect there is that people have to want to learn. I think that we are in a state where we have an older generation of folks who are of the mindset that they know. They already been there, done that. Whereas you haven't. Like, things have changed, to your earlier point. Mm-hmm. And you need to be a student again. You need to learn again, because things have now shifted. Things are no longer the same. What, and the amount of information that we have access to now, that in itself is different. Like, you just need to be willing to listen. And I think that that is probably the first step that folks need to realize. It's like, we went to school for this, and we literally go into a classroom and we go to professional developments for this. It's not just like, oh, pick a curriculum, any curriculum, grab it out of the air, and then it shows up in a classroom and you're teaching it. That's not how it happens.
I wish was that easy. It is not. It is such, now that I'm in like curriculum sales, it is a much more thorough process than that. But again, it's just ignorance.
And you know, you often hear, I'm sure y'all have heard it too, probably if you're watching, you've heard it too, around, I don't want someone telling my kid that it's okay to be gay, right? Because they're hearing them tell your kid to be gay, right? Yeah. But saying it's okay to be gay is actually doing something completely different for the kids in that room who are gay or already know, or for those who might grow up to make that choice later. It's about them not needing to suffer violence and hate from people. We're saying it's okay to be gay so that they don't get beat up in a locker room. Yeah. We're saying it's okay to be gay so no one walks into a gay bar and shoots them up.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta, it's not us trying to brainwash your child. It's us trying to push tolerance simply so that we can all exist safely. So they don't get me
psychological. That psychological safety aspect is so deep and so real. And I don't think that we talk about that aspect enough, just in the sense of like students who are experiencing anxiety, depression, and suicidal ideation. Like, that is real. And the age, like, we talk about developmentally appropriate, the age of these kids that are starting to see these things in their head of and feeling senses of hating themselves, that is happening younger and younger. And the reason as to why they're experiencing it is because we're not being allowed to talk to them about the way that they feel. Mm-hmm. And that they are not different. They are a human being, and they just have different, they have feelings that are okay, and they are normal. And that is what I feel like, that's something else that it just really frustrates me to even know that that is a possibility, that someone is, a child literally is out there right now feeling like they have to silence themselves, feeling like they have to suppress all of these feelings because of legislation that doesn't want to see them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it even goes as far as, like, I was looking at something. So you have all these states and schools that just will say, we're not going to talk about it. But then you even have, I think it was like out of the 50 states, there's like maybe 8 states right now that explicitly teach LGBTQIA identities in a negative light. Like, if it's going to talk about it, it's saying that this is wrong. It's saying that this is bad. So imagine being there. Imagine opening your book there and being a kid of that experience and saying
at
that.
At religious, like, schools only, or regular schools?
No, these are public schools. It's around like 8 states right now that still teach, or like can essentially teach, that it's wrong, or it's a negative thing to exist in that way. Yeah. So it's like, you got schools that choose to say nothing, and then you still have schools that what they are saying is even more harmful. So.
And y'all should just shut up. Shut up and speak when it's the right time to actually speak. Because this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anyways, do you have some thoughts on, like, some of this? There's probably some, like, educators, there might even be people that are, like, students that are hearing this and wondering, like, how do they support? Even if it's just within, maybe it's not, like, on a total school level, like, how can they support in a classroom, like, maybe one-on-one or just in general?
Absolutely. I think the key thing there, we say it a lot, or you might hear the word, just, like, affirmation. And I think that's key in this specific thing. I think it's very clear and evident to a kid if you are a safe space for them. And you may never realize why a child interacts with you in the way that they do, but they feel that on the inside. And so you, sure, definitely we want you to read things. Sure, we really hope that, like, you can do a deep dive, but it really starts with, are you a safe space? Have you opened yourself up for a child to be able to come to you and feel like it's okay for me to be myself with you? The most important layer of it is giving them a space to be, right? They have all these other spaces where they can't. When you encounter that child, are you a space where they can be? Because that's probably one of the most important things they can have in their life, right? And of course it kind of grows, but, like, start there. Start there. Like, and maybe right now you're like, well, I don't have anyone in my life. Well, do you not have anyone in your life? Or have you not made yourself enough of a safe space to know the people in your life that are?
You better drag them. Woo, because that's what it is.
Because that's what it is.
Wow.
If you look around you and you say,
I gotta fix my wig.
Nobody like that in my life, there's something wrong on your side.
Yeah.
Because they are. They're there. They just don't trust you with that information.
They exist everywhere.
Yeah. And you brought up a good point, because my dean, George Johnson, he's the author of All Boys Aren't Blue, and he says that it's important to invite people in. And it just hit me. I didn't understand why he wanted, or excuse me, why they wanted us to change that narrative. And the reason as to why they want us to change that narrative is because people need to feel comfortable. People need to feel as if they trust you. People want to feel safe. And so that's what's going to get them to be in a space to talk to you and to be vulnerable and to be themselves around you. So that was good. I appreciated that. That was really good.
But it starts there. And then as they talk and as you get to know that person, you'll hear the things that they need.
Yeah.
You'll hear the ways that you help. But it starts with just you creating that space. You don't have to force it. Don't force it down nobody's throat.
Right.
You might see that child in that corner who, like, I'm pretty sure that child is. But don't let that child be. No, Because, like, there's that thing, too, of, like, everyone assuming something for someone or making that. Everybody's on their own journey. Sure, that child may be, but that child may not be ready to be right now.
And also, like, they don't have, it's none of your business.
Like, mind yours.
It's none of your business. It's also like, how does that change how you interact with them? Like, naming it and identifying it, how does that change? If someone wants to be identified as that, absolutely. I'm more than happy to just affirm what you already said you are.
Yeah.
But if someone is not choosing that, like, we all have various aspects of our identity that are more prominent at certain times than others. If I'm in this certain space, like, I don't always want to be the Black woman in the space. But I have to step into that identity, or I can choose not to. And so it's like, don't force people to step into a piece of their identity that's not actually moving them right now in the way that they want. They can have it. It can be dormant. It could be there. It could be unseen by you. But how does that actually change you interact with them? And it shouldn't, unless it's in an affirming way.
And I think another key thing that other people can do that actually people within the community can't, like, as an LGBTQIA person, what we can't do is be inside of the straight spaces and create change. Like when you are in a cis space, when you are in a straight space and you're hearing these things, do you interrupt? Do you speak up or do you let it be? Because that joke sounds like a joke, but that same joke, they may walk down a corner and do something else. You know, like, so do you interrupt these ideas when you hear them? You know, like,
I was at the club the other night, and I was talking to this man who was trying to get at me, right? So we just have a conversation and we talk about working out. And I was like, oh, what do you do? Like weightlifting? He's like, well, yeah, of course. Like, it's not like, I'm like, what if I just said yoga? And I was just like, well, men do yoga.
Right.
Over this song, but I'm just like, let's, like, something as small as that. I'm just highlighting for people who are in straight spaces and feel like, oh, well, I don't want to put my foot down and make a stance and offend people, blah, 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 blah. Although I'm not afraid to offend people. But something as small as that, being like, no, you can do yoga.
Yeah. That's real, Liz. And, you know, I know that we've talked about this offline, is like, I love this new generation of students and kids, because this Zesty Challenge, I'm loving it. Like, I'm loving it. Like, be you, because you define who you are. You don't let the world do that. And that's why I love these kids, because they're like, I'm going to do what I want when I want to. And you can say whatever you believe, but I'm me. Like, and that's that.
Yeah, I think it's amazing that they're able to do that, but it's also sometimes you have to like look at it with a second eye, because even something
challenge,
is it like, are you being performative?
Yeah,
are you making people who live this experience a joke, or is it you just being free? Because it's beautiful if you're being free. Doing it to make a joke out of it.
Yes,
and that person who actually is Destiny walking down the street. Would you be laughing at them? Like, would you be telling them they're okay? Would you be willing to protect them, walk down the street with them?
Back.
You know, so I just hope it's a both and. You know, like, I really
absolutely.
Is if we're going, we're unlearning these things and breaking these things down, you feel cool being zesty, then let them be okay being
Let them be cool being zesty too.
Not in a TikTok video, but in real life.
No.
Right.
And don't profit off of zestiness if you're not really zesty, because that's what also bothers me.
Yes.
I'd like to have a sharp left turn, which is not really left, but like, that sounded crazy. But I want to talk about pronouns.
Yeah.
And I really want to talk about pronouns from the experience of misgendering people. And how I think that people are oftentimes, well, scared of pronouns, but also afraid, like the ego really attacks you and leads, right? And so like, I'm afraid to misgender somebody. So instead of me facing a fear that doesn't really impact somebody's life, I'm just not going to talk to them, or I'm going to like strategic talk less so that I don't have to say pronouns. So I'd like to talk about that, try to dispel the myth around these things, and just get your insight on it.
Yeah, I think I can't even find the right word, because it's not funny, but like how something as simple as like calling someone what they want to be called has become such a complex issue, because Pookie is Pookie. Nene is Nene.
Now, why Nene in it?
And JJ is JJ. And when they don't want to be called JJ anymore and want to be Jeremiah, they're Jeremiah. When Pookie outgrows Pookie and wants to be Chanel, that's Chanel. So we do it all the time. We do it all the time. Right?
Yep.
And if you think about that, when you think about nicknames and name changes, why are you willing to make that switch? Right? Mm-hmm. If someone says, I have this nickname, but I don't want to be that nickname anymore. I want y'all to call me this. What is it that makes you want to honor that change? Like, really think about that, right? It's because you want to honor that person. It's because they're coming to you with this thing saying that, like, actually, this fits more of who I am. or like I'm growing up to be this and this is going to make me feel better. Mm-hmm. And you hear that and you say, yeah, I love you. This is what you want? Yeah. Okay, Jeremiah. Okay, Chanel.
No problem.
It's like, but why is it different? Like, why don't we hear it the same way when someone is talking about a pronoun?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why don't we just hear it the same way? Why aren't we hearing the fact that this person is saying, I just want you to call me this? Because calling me this makes me feel seen. Calling me this makes me feel free. Calling me this makes me feel valued. Mm-hmm. And if you are against that, ask yourself why. What makes you so bitter that you can't simply give that person that? Like, what hurt? How does it hurt you to give someone that? You're just going on with your life. Now, on the topic of misgendering, I think I started there for a reason, because I think you have to understand really the nature or the importance of it. Because then when you get to misgendering, you see it a little different, right? Mm. So a lot of people are afraid of misgendering people. And then you have a lot of people in, you know, gender variant identities who like see it different ways. You have people who are seriously angered when they're misgendered. Right?
Yeah.
Rightfully so. Yeah, think about it this way. I have lived my life in an experience that was not mine. I've lived my life in an experience that was not mine. And I'm telling you here today that this is actually my experience and I'm not afraid to own it. Right? So when you walk out there and that is a choice, like people say all the time, why would I choose to be gay? It's not fun. Why would I choose to shift pronouns? Why would I choose this for fun? I'm choosing it for a reason, right? And so some people, rightfully so, are angry. Like, I am telling you this. I need this. And you are choosing not to see me, right? You're upsetting me, right? It's kind of like, think about, I think women sometimes, or like any group, that like there was that one word that at one point you were okay with, but now don't call me that.
Female.
Don't call
don't
me
you,
that.
Don't fix your lips, because
exactly,
I'm going to correct it.
Right? And it will make me angry because I know that is not who I am. What you're saying is not me, right? But then you have other people, and I think for me, with misgendering, it's a little tricky. I don't get angry per se, because one, my personal opinion, I like to give people grace, right? Language evolves, things evolve, but that doesn't mean people are able to evolve at the pace that it is, right? When I think about my family, telling them I'm non-binary, telling them I'm trans, because I knew it, didn't mean that like they, like the moment that I came into it and I made this announcement, they can't get here that fast. You know what I mean? Like they still see me as who they knew me as. You know what I'm saying? Call me this, I'm this person, I'm this person. But it's not as fast for them. My mother still sees me as her daughter. And that's, I'm learning. It's a process. The process it took for me to say who I am, my mom has to go through the process to unlearn who I was to her, right? So I got to give people grace for that, for one. And I think it's also around, like, I can feel when you're being genuine. An offhand misgender, saying the wrong pronoun, doesn't bother me when I know and I can feel your sincerity and that you're actually trying to see who I am and that you care about who I am. Mm-hmm. When you show me that matters to you, a pronoun switch doesn't affect me. But I can see, though, when you're not genuine. I can see when it's not sincere. Right? And that's when it becomes, well, no. But I'm at a point in life where I'm like, the people that get it. And the girls that don't.
Okay.
if you can't get it, that's just showing me something about you. And that just may mean you're not ready to be in my circle. You're not ready to be in my tribe just yet. And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. But I got to protect my space and my peace.
Yes.
At the end and beginning of the day.
Yeah.
I'd like to get into a conversation about, well, I now know through speaking with you that pronouns are part of gender affirming care.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to talk about, like, dig a little deeper into what all the components are of gender affirming care.
Yeah. So just to define, gender affirming care in itself is basically any steps that you might take to affirm a gender identity change. Right. And I'm actually intentionally avoiding the word transition, because gender affirming care isn't about transitioning someone. Mm-hmm. You literally said it. Pronouns isn't someone going through a hormonal change. Right. Mm-hmm. Just to be clear for people to understand and have clarity, gender affirming care is referring to the process that trans identifying people go through to affirm their identity. Right. But it steps to it. And I think it's this big controversial topic, because as soon as someone says, going actually back to Florida, you had all these parent groups that are like, well, if my kid told you as a teacher that they're trans, and you went and you took my kid to this doctor, and now they're going to start getting all these hormones, and now they're going to make all these decisions about their body, and now they're going to do all this, and you can't do that without me. You should not be able to do that without me. But we can't. It's against the law.
Thank you. Like, what?
No one can take your child to the doctor and say, transition this baby for me. No one can do that. It's an irrational fear. But even in the sense, I think a lot of people looking from the outside, you had like little Boosie or something talking about Zaya Wade around like, how you doing that? Basically, the first thing people think, the first thing he's shouting is, don't take that baby manhood. You know what I'm saying? You're talking about genitals, right? Why do we do that? Why is that our immediate reaction?
He's so silly, but
because as soon as someone hears transgender, that's what they think about. What body parts do you have? What do you look like? But that's not gender affirming care. Gender affirming care starts with pronouns, right? It's how do you affirm the person in their journey. It's also about gender expression.
Exactly.
Maybe then changing their clothes and changing their pronouns affirms who they are.
Yeah.
Right? Right? And those are steps that kids can take, right?
Yes.
It's literally professional doctors and professional therapists. There's a guideline to what's age appropriate things, right? Mm-hmm. When you get to a certain age, when kids get to like that adolescent stage, it's an option with talking with family for them to get puberty blockers. Right. And that's to slow down their puberty. Right. Because when you're thinking about a young child who may be a transgender boy, thinking about the mental effect it would have on that child to have a period could be detrimental.
Yeah.
What it would have on that child who's now has the pronouns, who now wears the clothes to grow boobs. What is that doing? How does that distort their experience? And it's something called, actually, it's called dysmorphia, body dysmorphia. It's like when who you see yourself as in your body doesn't really align. So that's something that can happen at adolescence, but not everybody has that. It's a choice, again, consulted with the doctor, the family, and the parents. They aren't left out of that choice. And then when they get older, closer to adulthood, they can think about hormones. And then even that is, again, a family choice. It is not made without parents, right? Mm-hmm. And then as they get even older, like children actually cannot have gender-affirming surgeries. They can't. They can't. And actually, to have a gender, there are so many steps to have a gender-affirming surgery. You have trans adults right now who can't have it because they haven't been cleared, right?
Yeah.
Because it's that hard. So no one's walking around trying to change your child, trying to tear apart their bodies or do something unnatural to your child. There is a process. Stop talking about things that you don't know. Stop forming opinions around things that you don't know. the word for that is ignorance. And I'm sorry, it is ignorant to make these statements if you don't actually know how it works.
Exactly.
And it's harmful. Mm-hmm. It's harmful to the kids that need it.
Mm-hmm. And you should be seen and not heard if you don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Watch this.
How did we get here? Well, this conversation has been robust and
we got into a lot of stuff.
Are there any like lasting thoughts or like lasting words you want people to carry out of this conversation? And you can take a second. We believe in giving grace and time if you want.
I will just say, if they didn't hear anything else, I really hope they heard the part about what it means to be a safe space for someone. And that being the easiest thing that you can do to help. If you don't know what to do to help, start with yourself, right? What would it mean for someone to be, ask yourself, what would it mean? How do I make it so that someone would feel okay coming to me to hold that? Can I hold that? Am I ready to hold that? You know, what is it? What do you look for in someone else when you are trusting them to hold that? You know what you need from someone to know that you're supported and that you care and you can trust them. So how do you be that for somebody else in this situation? You know, and it's the most important thing that you can do for these kids. It's the most important thing you can do for the adults in your life that are in this community, because the world is really unsafe. It is seriously unsafe, and it's getting more and more safe every day. And it's not something that people outside of the community can continue to turn an eye away from.
Yeah.
Because like I said, it doesn't stop here. What they're attacking today, they will use to attack the next thing tomorrow. The moment that they take away LGBTQIA education in schools, what happens when they start taking away education about your race and your culture in schools? Mm-hmm. What if they decide, well, why do we even need to teach about women in history in schools? Well, why do we even need to teach this in schools, right? The moment you start letting them control what you hear and see and have access to learning is the moment you're giving up a major piece of yourself.
Drops
mic. Right to education is probably the most important rights you'll ever have.
Absolutely. Woo, child.
Yes. Good, thank you both. Before we wrap, I know this was heavy, but do some karaoke. We're going to go out.
There you go.
But no, seriously, thank you all for having the space to even open up this conversation. It's important. And by no means, none of us are perfect. I'm not perfect. But the willingness to grow, I think, says a lot. So, yeah.
And so, if you didn't know, now you know. This week's call to action is for you to take a look into GLSEN. GLSEN works to ensure that LGBTQ students are able to learn as well as grow in a school environment free from bullying, free from harassment, and they believe that together we can transform our nation's schools into safe and affirming environments for all youth.
And I love it. I just did a quick search on their site, and they have, Key spoke to inclusive curriculum and like what that could actually look like when we were talking in the concept development, and they actually have an inclusive curriculum guide. So if you are an educator, you can look at your curriculum and compare it to the guide so that you're evaluating your current curriculum in the lens of what's best for our LGBTQIA students. So whether you're a student, student of life, right? Or an educator of life, we push you to go to GLSEN. That's GLSEN, and it'll also be in the description. And with that being said, we're closing out.
Peace, love.